The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Something big is happening at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Take up to $15,000 off all remaining 2018 Cadillacs. It's all going on now during the Big Win Sales event. You can't miss up to $15,000 off new Cadillacs. Just ask for General Manager Brian Danahy, our good friend here on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, and he'll take up to $15,000 off your next Cadillac. All the details are at the dealership. Get to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorsecadillactampa.com. That's edmorsecadillactampa.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, pick your car, now pick your payment. That's right, pick your car, now pick your payment. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com is the website. You will see all kinds of incredible options there. They are right there on Causeway Boulevard for you in Brandon. So easy to get to. Beautiful dealership. Ira and I have been out there several times, and all new 2018 Cadillacs get 0% financing for up to 60 months, plus receive $2,000 down payment assistance at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Their website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. That's where you get it started, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And here's Ira. Happy Thursday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast, August 16th. The clock is ticking on the regular season. The sage of Tampa Bay sports is in the house. He's Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. And it's been a busy day at One Buck. Mr. Sage, there you are, adorned in your deep silver. I'll call it pewter, Ira. Your Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.
I'm prone to the, you know, I'm partial to this color.
You seem to be, and it looks good on you. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon / Tampa Cadillac gear. You look great, and those fantastic offers we heard about are even better. And Ira, how are you, and what are you feeling around here today? There's an extra buzz in the step.
You know, we started a little earlier on Tuesday, a little bit earlier. We had the Tony Dungy press conference. And we're 2 days away from preseason game number two. Everybody's wondering what the quarterback rotation's going to be. You know, all I know is I saw DeMar Dotson trudging off the field, and I do use the word trudging. And I think that's starting to become an issue. Where is DeMar Dotson, and what's the backup plan if he doesn't play, he's not ready for the Superdome? I can't throw him in against the Saints if he hasn't had any practice. We'll see what's going on there, but training camp grinds on. It grinds on. We're in the late stages. Not too many fans came out today, and I don't expect too many next week either. We're close to the end of this, Lee, and you will salute it. You will doff your cap next a week from Wednesday. I know you will.
I got one liner real quick for you. Are the four most feared words in podcast history, Lee DeKemper is here?
You know, Steve, you got your fans, DeKemper. You got your fans out
and
there.
And your actors as well.
Ira, what are you talking about? I got to come right after you.
Right after, man. DeMar, I haven't said anything.
You said everything. DeMar Dotson, this is his 10th season. He needs training camp, and he can't get on the field if he doesn't practice.
What good's training camp?
Before game
week? Why are we even having training camp if you don't need it, Steve? Don't you need it? Live action?
Does Brent Grimes need it?
You know.
That's my point. Look, guys have held out before and walked in week one. You don't think DeMar Dotson, if the doctors give him the thumbs up and he's not quote-unquote injured, he's just scored a light on practice, you know, going 80%, they're not worried about anything. You don't think if he doesn't play in the preseason and he's just kind of lightish in practice, he can't walk?
You know, he's doing it half-assed.
Well, I do know he's been doing some 11-on-11s. Like Steve said, he's about 80%. But
why do you always lean towards Isbitz on?
Well, I'm not. You know, as I said, I lean. What? I didn't say I'm. You know, I'm 100% in his sphere. But Dotson is practicing. He's been around the block a few times, and I'm going to reference Brent Grimes. Brent Grimes was out for 2 weeks. He comes back Monday, first practice. He's running step and step from DeSean Jackson. Makes a beautiful play to get a pick. He did the same thing again today. You would never guess he missed a day of practice. And Dotson, when I talked to Dotson a couple of days ago, I don't dismiss what you're saying.
I think it's different for a guy in the trenches.
Possibly. What I'm going to say is I saw him come off the practice field, And he walked like Frankenstein. He was sore. It kind of reminded me of why I hate training camp. It gives me flashbacks of when I played high school football 2 days. You were sore for a week and a half. You could barely get out of bed. And that's what he looked like. But again, Cutter is known for giving veterans breaks. He's worried about December. He's not worried about August. DeMar Dotson falls in that category. He knows what he has in Dotson. Dotson, again, has been around, I'll use the phrase again, been around the block a few times. And I think Cutter's more worried about September 9th. Then August 14th.
Steve, when Dotson tells DeKemper and I in separate discussions that he's behind his own schedule, that's an alarm bell, Mr. Isbitz. And you can talk about your one-on-ones all you want, but the fact is he's not where he thought he would be. And when you ask Dirk Cutter, everything's fine with DeMar Dotson. No, that injury wasn't more serious. It wasn't more complicated. Well, that's what the head coach is going to say. But we got it right from the guy. He's behind schedule. I'm not panicking. I'm not saying he's not going to be ready for week one, but I'd like to see him be going 100% in practice. We don't know if he's going to play Saturday against Tennessee. We don't know what's going on there. I want to see the guy on the field, and I want to see him playing well.
The Bucs always said they're quote-unquote hopeful Dotson would be ready for OTAs. Then it was hopeful he would be ready for training camp. Now it's hopeful he'll be ready for regular season. Hope, you might as well use the word afraid, not hopeful.
We've talked about Dotson ad infinitum here, Sage. I was stunned when you said you need to see him before
Steve, the point
day.
The point remains, you can write anything you want down on your little piece of paper over there, Isbitz. But the point remains, they're thin on the right side of the offensive line. They're thin. They don't have proven players.
All right, well, then let me get this back to you here. We didn't discuss this in the last podcast when we dove into the preseason game itself. This was one subject we did not talk about, which was Evan Smith started at right guard in that game, which kind of threw everybody for a loop because Bedenach was available, and he played later in the game. Mr. Kappa played a lot of reps later in the game, but there's Evan Smith, and the O-line looks good. It looks physical, and all of a sudden, Dirk Cutter's calling him the sixth man, and Smith is 32 years old. He's done it before, and he was in the lineup, Ira.
But, Steve, when I asked Cutter earlier this week directly about the battle at right guard, I just said battle. I gave him every chance to say it's a three-headed contest, and he didn't. He said there's two guys going at it. Obviously, Smith wasn't part of that. He's talking about Bedenach and Kappa. So I think Smith is penciled in as that swing guy. He's a backup. That's just the way it is right now. I think the reason he started, Lee, is because at that particular point, you know, that Thursday night against Miami, Smith was in the best shape to play with the ones. And that's going to change as the weeks go on. But for that night, he felt the most comfortable with Evan Smith playing with Fitzpatrick. I think that's what it was.
Do you get any sense? I do not, but do you get any sense? You know, this is Bedenach's job to win or lose. Do you get any sense he's not so much won it, but even ahead of the ball game? You know,
I think that's very open question right now.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I think 2 months ago, it was Bedenach's job to lose.
Well, you know, you could say, Ira, you mentioned it to Dirk Cutter regarding the battle at right guard. Maybe we all just assumed that one of those two guys wasn't Evan Smith. Maybe we all just, you know, missed the curveball kind of thing.
It's possible, but I think you would have mentioned Evan Smith by name if all of a sudden he's in the race to be a starter. I think he's looked at as a valuable asset that can play left guard, center, and right guard.
Well, also you have to factor in, Steve's brought this up in the past and written about it, as have you. I'm trying to think of another term outside of mind games, but, you know, Cutter likes to use his platform to motivate players, yay or nay. Maybe he doesn't believe he needs to motivate Evan Smith. Maybe he believes he needs to motivate Bedenach. Maybe he believes he needs to have a good word about Kappa to you know, boost him with confidence and make him practice harder. You know, we could factor that in as well.
By the way, guys, I was asked, Steve, this might be on your agenda for a couple minutes from
now. I have
now.
No agenda.
All right.
he's got an agenda.
I was asked by a veteran member of the media. Lee, a veteran member of the media. It wasn't Isbitz or DeKemper, but I was asked today, hey, what's this about Monken calling the plays and then all of a sudden Cutter's going to take it back from New Orleans? And the suggestion was Cutter's not going to take it back from New Orleans. They're going to stick with Monken. Otherwise, what are you doing with Monken for four games? Is Cutter going to call the plays for the last exhibition game or the third exhibition game? And Steve, my understanding is it's going to be Monken in the preseason. and it's going to be Cutter in New Orleans. Could I be wrong?
I don't think so, no. I don't think you're wrong at all. And I think Dirk Cutter loves play calling. He's an astute play caller. Historically speaking, some fans may get annoyed and everybody gets pissed off at play calling when you're losing. But the guy's good at it. It's why he got the job. And he said, quote, that he promised Todd Monken, this came up on SiriusXM NFL Radio, that he promised Todd Monken in the offseason that he would get him some experience calling plays and that he would make him a walk-around offensive coordinator. That may have been my speculation. That's what he needed to do to keep Monken on the staff, because Monken may have said, Dirk, I need more than figurehead offensive coordinator to talk to you media idiots and coach wide receivers, and they made a deal. I don't think Cutter needs any extra time in his own offense with the quarterback and Jameis, who's going into his fourth year. That's the longest consecutive stretch in the NFL. If Dirk Cutter can't make that an advantage to have that chemistry with these quarterbacks, then he's doing it all wrong.
Lee, does Cutter need to take over for the last exhibition game just to get back in the swing of things, or is that crazy?
I agree with Steve. I'm not
saying. Well, once again, you agree with Steve.
Well, I don't want to lie and be dishonest. It's not that as Steve said, Winston, and, well, not just Winston. Well, you know, it's Fitzpatrick. And it shows you where I think of Fitzpatrick. Nice guy and everybody, but he's a backup. That's a good question, because with Winston, he's got all this experience. The two of them have. Longest in the NFL, as Steve points out. Not so much with Fitz. Interesting question.
But
I don't
you know what, Lee? Fitzpatrick's so sharp mentally. So, you know, that Wunderlich test is just stunning. 48. You know, you'd get a 4 and I'd get an 8. He got a 48.
Rubik's Cube.
He knows Cutter's offense. Fitzpatrick knows Cutter's offense. So that's probably a non-factor. I guess, Steve, it's the way it's going to be. Monken's going to have the exhibition season. And the week leading into New Orleans, it's going to be all Cutter. With some input from Monken. He's not going to shut Monken down. But Cutter's going to call the plays in New Orleans.
I'll throw you a caveat. Cutter has said it's given him also a chance to be a head coach. Maybe Cutter feels, and we've all said this before, there's a sense of, you know, their backs are against the wall. Let's be honest. The coaches know that. Maybe Cutter feels by roaming around and being more of a head coach, if Munkin's doing a good job, even though Cutter loves to call plays, you know, common sense rules the day here. He may love to call plays, but he loves his job more than that.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because in this discussion with this veteran of the media, Steve, one of the last things...
Is there a reason why we can't name the
I'm not naming it. One of the last things that the guy said, because I said, Cutter's not giving that up. It's that, you know, like Steve said, that's his forte, that's his reputation. And the guy goes, if they win, he keeps his job. If they win.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he thinks Munkin's doing a good job and can help him win, Steve, that goes a long way. I mean, there's a lot of factors going on.
Not just that, but if Cutter can, like I said, he was roaming around on the sideline and kind of quipped like, yeah, I was probably bugging other coaches because I actually had some time in my hands. I'm paraphrasing that. But if Cutter thinks he's helping his team out by distributing responsibilities, have Munkin call plays, you know,
Steve,
they got to win.
Steve, that could come into play if in the first couple of games they're 0-2 and the offense is struggling. That could come into play.
Well, in this whole hypothetical, take out the name Todd Monken and insert the name Ryan Fitzpatrick or Jameis Winston, and that's why you have a quarterback controversy. Because if the team is winning, his job is to win and not worry about somebody's feelings. That's what could make it all interesting. I don't think Cutter, frankly, is dumb enough to set himself up with a play caller controversy. He has been on the record in the past saying, everybody I know who ever gave up play calling went back to it. Because that's just how it is.
And it's a big reason why he got the job.
And he knows about Andy Reid's situation with that, his good friend, and that's just the reality. To clarify, it's the NFC, not the full NFL.
Okay.
Cutter's relationship with the play caller, same head coach, or excuse me, same play caller, same quarterback. Cutter's got the longest streak going because Sean Payton and Mike McCarthy gave it up for a while. And then they went back to it because they said, I need to call plays.
Well, and we also got to factor in what Cutter says on the record to us may not be what he says with the Glazers and light behind the doors.
Absolutely.
We'll see. But and you in your last podcast, Ira, you astutely explained to everyone that we can't go judge preseason play calling because it's not real. It's not real. So what? Cutter's.
Why would you give away what you're going to do in the regular season? Why would you give that away?
Well, it's interesting. But the Evan Smith thing, Lee made a good point. It could be was a way on Thursday night to throw a jolt at Benenach and Kappa to tell them, hey, you guys you're not even playing for first team. You're playing for second team.
It certainly jumped out at me in the game against Miami. When Benenach didn't start or Kappa, when neither of them started and they both played, that jumped out at me.
Now, Benenach was coming off an injury, so that might have been.
That could be the timing. Could be the timing.
Let's make a little wager.
And by the way, Evan Smith did a good job.
He did okay.
He did a good
job. Ready
for
a little wager?
All right, baby.
Uh-oh.
What do we got?
All right, I will propose. I will wager. I'll just bet you $20. I don't care who's on the other end. I'll bet you $20. I'll say Evan Smith is the starting right guard on opening day.
Wow.
You take that bet, Sage? You want to pick the field outside of Smith? It's a good bet because he could get injured in one of these games. And then
damn
you win.
Interesting bet, Steve. It's a damn interesting bet.
20 large.
And that's not counting that he could go out and get a guard still.
Can I count on his bets that he's going to pay up or is he going to welch over there? He's on tape. If he's on tape.
Who controls your paychecks?
Javier.
Javier controls
my paycheck. We got a bet, $20.
All right, $20 it is. I'm betting that Evan Smith starts opening day, and if anybody else.
And I got the field.
You got the field, exactly. So if they get decimated and they bring back Luke Stocker and he starts.
I got Ryan Jensen when Marpet moves to center. Here we go.
Ira, got to interrupt. FanRetreat.com, the Bourbon Street Takeover is here. Here's the need to know that everyone needs to know. It all starts by going to FanRetreat.com and clicking on Popular Retreats. That's where you will see all the details, the itinerary of the Bourbon Street Takeover, the official hotel, where I think we have 60-something rooms booked already. Ira's not staying there. He's too cool. But he already booked on FanRetreat.com at the Residence Inn in downtown there in New Orleans. FanRetreat.com is your home for all hotel bookings, rent-a-car, flights, event tickets everywhere. Bucks tickets, especially, of course. But you can get tickets anywhere. For every sporting event around the country, concerts, but the Bourbon Street Takeover, click on Popular Retreats. You'll see the details, including the night before party where Ira, Justin Pulaski, the stick carriers, they'll all be hanging out. It's a pep rally. Ira's going to talk. Kamish is going to be riling them up. Lee will be there. I won't, but that's where you want to get those details, and you can attend part or all of the trip, whatever you want. FanRetreat.com. We're so grateful to them for putting it all together and helping us coordinate. Because we're all just trying to grow our beloved fan base here for the Bucks. FanRetreat.com. Click on Popular Retreats. You'll get all your information there. All right, Ira, how about that? Are you ready for you got your speech written for the night before?
Lee, how lucky are we that the Bourbon Street Takeover can happen in week one? The Bucks don't have a loss. Zero. Zero losses. And in a town like New Orleans, Lee.
Ira, Tony Dungy, Father Dungy, the man you got into the Hall of Fame with your multiple presentations, was in the building. Ring of Honor night, the end of September, Monday Night Football. Dungy, of course, met the media to discuss this. Your impressions of his time here, his time in front of the media, what you did see, what you didn't see. What should people know from the sage of Tampa Bay sports?
My biggest takeaway from the Dungy press conference, Lee, is that he's come to terms with the way it ended for him in Tampa. He's come to terms with it. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Dungy, has that kind of temperament. He would rather dwell on them hiring him when nobody else would in 1996 rather than the fact that they dumped him after four playoff appearances in 5 years. What would Buck fans give right now for four playoff appearances in a five-year span? Would they want Cutter fired? Of course not. But I'll tell you what, Lee, and you were here. At the end of the 2001 season, after another dreadful playoff loss, at the Vet, a lot of Buck fans thought the Glazers did the right move.
They still do a lot of them.
They didn't even know that they were going to get Gruden. They wanted him gone. I also noticed who wasn't here. For whatever reason, Derek Brooks wasn't here.
No Sapp.
And I did not see Dungy's wife, Lauren, sitting in the front row. I did not see that.
Interesting.
Didn't see it.
Now, I have to be fair. They had a video presentation where Sapp and Brooks were prominent. So it wasn't like if anybody's trying to.
No, there's no problems between Sapp, Brooks, and Dungy.
Is Dungy's wife still irritated about with the Glazer family?
I still think she harbors some questions about how it was handled, what was said at the time.
By the way, I hear that a lot. Is there a good way to fire a person?
There isn't. You know, look what happened with Lovie Smith. I mean, you know, when Light called Lovie Smith and said the Glazers want to talk to you, and by the way, it's not looking good. Lovie Smith said, forget it. I'm coming up to my office at 11:30 or midnight. And, you know, he came up with his wife and his kid, and they cleaned out his office. Again, not a good way to leave. Gruden, 3 weeks after the season, you know, on a Friday night.
No, I hate to take away from Tony Dungy, but you know more than most people. That fateful meeting that Gruden and Brian Glazer had that Friday afternoon, and then a few hours later he was fired. Did that get testy? Did it get heated? Did Chucky snap at them when they had a couple of requests and they said, okay, that's it?
I think Gruden was forceful. I think he was assertive. I don't think there's any way he thought he was going to get fired. I think he said very, strongly that we got to spend some money around here. We got to get some free agents. You've been sitting on your hands. Probably didn't use that term because that's insulting. But, you know, he made no bones about it. We got to spend some money around here. We got to upgrade this talent level. And I guess the Glazers mulled it over for a few hours after he left and told him he was dismissed. He said he was out in the movies.
He was having an Italian dinner.
Yeah, having an Italian dinner.
Steve knows exactly what
he said. There's no good way to can anybody.
In the fateful meeting with Gruden and the Glazers, did the Glazers reiterate they wanted him to develop a quarterback and he rebuffed them?
That could be part of it. I don't know that for a fact. What I do know is it takes a lot of guts to fire a Super Bowl winning coach. It does, especially after a 9-win season when things fell apart in December. I guess that was just a bad taste in the Glazer mouth, the way things ended in December.
Never recovered.
And you could argue that they've never recovered. As far as Dungy's concerned, Steve, it's going to be a heck of a night, you know, on that Monday night against Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, Buck fans aren't going to want to hear this. They haven't always handled Ring of Honor night with distinction.
What have they?
I still remember the Lynch night and Brooks and Sapp on the sidelines beside themselves. Look at this defense. Can you believe this? And Lynch was right there with them. The three of them. Three linchpins, so to speak, of that defense, Super Bowl defense.
You mean Lynch, Brooks, and you?
No, Lynch, Brooks, and Seth watching, you know, and I guess they were playing Atlanta that night. It was a travesty. It was an absolute travesty.
Now, here's one for you. Piece of Bucks trivia. I'm asking you. I don't know the answer. Is the Leroy Salmon induction the only Ring of Honor game that the Bucks have won? That was a day game, by the way.
Well, this is number 12. I can't think they're 1-10.
Well, they had a couple times where they had two inductees.
Up. Yeah. No, I got to think they won one along the line, Steve. We got to look at that. You're always good with the numbers.
We can look it up, Sage. Now, as far as you mentioned who was here, who wasn't here, who was here, who stood out to you, any old-time faces, anybody from Dungy's coaching staff that you might have remembered, or anybody notable?
Well, I saw Rondé.
Did you?
I saw Rondé. I saw Ian Beckles. Mark Royals, of course, is usually here. Jimmy Giles, you know, out of appreciation for being a fellow Ring of Honor guy, Giles shows up. And yes, Jimmy, I will try to get you into Canton. I'll do everything I can. Steve, the Dungy era, what strikes me, and maybe I'm exaggerating it because, you know, this crowd tends to be a little vocal. When it was, you know, when Dungy got in the hall in 2016, there were quite a few Buck fans, at least that made themselves, you know, known, that didn't think he belonged. They didn't think he belonged.
And I played the fifth.
You may be part of that club.
I played the fifth.
But if you were in that room hearing me talk, I think those people don't know Dungy's record. When you look at Dungy's record, and I didn't try to get Dungy in the Hall of Fame based on his work in the community and how he turned, you know, the Warwick Dunn Foundation and Brooks. No, you got to start with winning. He was a historic winner, Steve, and I think the people that are questioning Dungy's Hall of Fame credentials don't realize he was a historically successful coach in this league.
The numbers, the pure winning numbers, and ultimately a coach's job is to win, are extraordinary, but the fans here remember failure.
Yeah.
That's the searing memory of we fired a coach, then we hired one and won the Super Bowl. That's tough for any fan base anywhere to swallow.
But he didn't pick the offensive talent, Steve. You know, McKay's got to fall on his sword
He is a part of he was a fixture here. I get it, but still he's the head coach. He's the head coach. And I think what hurts him is that in Indianapolis, local fans here, Bucks fans, see, Peyton Manning, anybody could have won a Super Bowl with that guy. So that hurts him in the eyes of Bucs fans.
That hurts him, but then you got to look at his quarterbacks in Tampa, Lee, and you got to give him credit. I think, you know what? Here's what's interesting.
He's trying to get me going here, and I'm doing my best.
Lee,
shut up.
Lee's being very good.
Lee, you're being good. tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but ironically, I think you could argue very seriously and very confidently that the high point of Dungy's career in Tampa was a loss.
Oh, come on.
The championship game loss in St. Louis. I think you
You're
can make a persuasive
Ira.
Course. You're native St. Louis. You love that town. The greatest show on turf. I've had guys in that are Hall of Fame voters saying that that's one of the greatest defensive performances they've ever seen.
These
guys have been covering football for 40 years. So don't you give Dungy credit for an 11-6 loss to the Rams that could have been a win?
They couldn't score a touchdown.
Lee,
it was
Lee, they almost beat him. Nobody gave the Bucs a chance going into that game.
You're absolutely correct. It was a defensive performance for the ages. They couldn't score a touchdown.
Man's got Sean King under center over there, Steve. What are you going to do?
You know what? If you want to use that logic, then Monty Kiffin needs to go into the Ring of Honor in the next 2 or 3 years. Right?
I don't know who was more architect of that defense, Kiffin or Dungy. I don't know. I think that's a fair question.
Should Quinn go into the Hall of Fame, the Atlanta Falcons coach? I mean, he got to the Hall of Fame. His greatest game was a choke job for the ages.
No, he's not going to. Come on. He doesn't have the record of Tony Dungy over there. Now,
take
it easy.
We're teasing you. I think
Lee's got something he wants to say. And in a future podcast, he will say it.
Yeah, we'll hit that. We did a great square off, Lee versus you on Tony Dungy, and it was one of the two podcasts that I've lost in a couple of years.
Ooh.
So the recording was never aired, but we'll do it again. It'll be great fun. I think we'll do it as a solo thing.
Did I raise my voice during that
discussion?
There
was a lot of screaming. Now, Sage, Dungy night will be interesting, and we'll see who's here and not here then. And you know what? Maybe today's attendance might have been a little bit affected by the fact that it's 6 weeks away. It's really 5 weeks away. So a lot of people might have thought, hey, well, I'm coming out there in 5 weeks for the big show.
You certainly think Brooks and Sapp, Warwick Dunn, and company will show up big time for that Monday night game.
I think it'll be extraordinary, the turnout for that game. Ira, there is a game on Saturday night. Buccaneers, forget about who they're playing, the Titans, who have pretty good in the trenches, and Mariota's a good quarterback, better than Ryan Tannehill, who we saw last week. What do you want to see from a Bucs perspective on Saturday night, preseason week two? You know the starters are going to get close to a half.
Lee, you know what I'm looking at? The Bucs running game. I'm not too worried about them moving the ball through the air. Now, of course, the red zone is still an open-ended issue, but they did a good job on red zone offense. In Miami, they cashed in touchdowns instead of field goals or missed field goals, whatever you want to call it. And you can't win in this league with field goals. You got to score touchdowns.
No, Cutter's proven
especially,
that. Dungy's proven that.
Especially in this division. It's a high-scoring division. New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina. You're right, and that was a problem for the Dungy offense. There's no question about it. The running game, you give them a C-minus. I want to see more from Ronald Jones, certainly.
Yeah.
Barber doesn't have a lot more to prove to me. He is what he is. He's a workmanlike runner. You love when I call him the next Ernest Graham. You love that
I think
one.
That's a perfect
And I came up with that. That's my patent over there, Isbitz. Don't try to take it. And,
you need some residuals for that.
And Ernest Graham was a big reason why the Bucs won the division in 07 and had a fantastic first quarter against the Giants, and we didn't know how good the Giants. They went on to win the Super Bowl that year. Graham gashed them in the first quarter, and the Bucs were leading 7-0 in that game.
Remember how Graham was much maligned,
you know,
Mr. August?
Ernest Graham did a lot of things well, didn't do anything great, but did a lot of things well. Reminds me of Peyton Byrne. And what does Cutter say? Every time you don't think Barber's that good at one particular thing, he exceeds your expectations. Mm. Not a bad word of praise there. I want to see more from Ronald Jones. You don't want to see Sims at all, and you got Quiz Rogers. I tell you what, that number four running back spot, I think it's open. I think it's wide open. Sean Wilson still hanging around. Cutter likes him.
Cutter likes him. I haven't really seen anything.
Cutter likes him for whatever reason. He's got a shot, Steve. He's got a shot. I want to see him run the ball better against Tennessee. I want to see the blocking a little bit better. I know Ronald Jones scored that short touchdown run. And speaking of touchdown runs, 8 touchdown runs for a season, that's not going to cut it.
What was it?
And that's 2 years in a row they've had 8 rushing touchdowns.
Well, the culprit.
That is not close to being good enough.
The culprit's in Oakland. So I think by addition by subtraction.
You know, and that's part of the problem in the red zone, Steve. If you can't run for a touchdown when the field gets constricted, you know, you're on the 8-yard line. That's tough sledding. That's tough sledding if you keep throwing the ball.
I'm going to choose, because it's fun and it's probably accurate, I'm going to choose to believe Todd Monken when he said we chose to suck, meaning the attitude on this team is all wrong. You guys aren't doing what you're supposed to do. You're not into it. I'm going to believe that that was true, and I want to see that finishing. They did very well in the red zone the other night, and hopefully that will continue. But
by the way,
I'm
going to throw this out because Steve loves to drop nuggets on you, and I got one. 2 years in a row, the Bucs have scored 8 touchdowns on the ground. 2 years in a row. Last year, Lee, how many rushing touchdowns did the Saints score? The New Orleans Saints. Right.
Oh,
give me a quick answer.
12.
I think it was 22.
Woo. You didn't give me a chance to guess.
22, Steven. 22. No, and they're a passing team.
Well, they had Kamara.
They had Kamara, and I think
Ingram led the way.
Ingram had 12.
Yeah, I'll say this again, and I don't mean to disparage the guy when I say this. I'm just talking football in general. You know, the Bucs passed up on Kamara to draft Justin Evans. I have nothing against Justin Evans, but you tell me who would have had a bigger impact on this team. Shoot, they're talking about moving Justin Evans to nickel corner because of injuries. You wouldn't be talking about moving Alvin Kamara to wide receiver because of injuries.
You know how you score rushing touchdowns in the red zone? Physicality. Uh-huh. You got to beat people up. The Bucs didn't have it, Steve. They didn't have it.
There's the chose to suck line. We're told that we have the horses here. So, let's see the horses go trample somebody. Now, I want to throw something at you, Ira. In practice the other day, Dirk Koetter afterwards was asked, Justin Evans continued playing some nickel. He was asked, hey, is it sort of a stretch to think that, regular season time, you're going to want to have Whitehead and Justin Evans on the field at the same time? And Koetter said, I don't think so at all. He said, quote, it's no knock on Chris Conte.
He just pulls the name out.
Yeah, which I thought was fantastic, because coaches don't really do that.
Oh, Conte's going to love that because he's the guy who says he hasn't gotten any respect since he joined the league.
Yeah, Conte's going to love that. And Koetter basically said, probably one of them would be at nickel. So, this Justin Evans thing at nickel is serious, especially if Hargraves is hurt. And Koetter reiterated something he's said many times, we need the best guys on the field. But they're desperate, man, to get they got to win. There is no sugarcoating it. You can't go 0-3. You can't go 1-3. Otherwise, it's a disaster, which is why I think Evan Smith's going to play. And you know what? If Whitehead keeps impressing, that's the guy I want to see Saturday night. If he continues to ripple this organization, they're going to throw him on the field and say, make a play, man.
And Tennessee's best receiver is the tight end. And maybe Whitehead will be matched up against him a couple of times. Delanie Walker, mm-hmm. He's a good player. Their wide receivers are nothing to crow about.
No.
Absolutely nothing. And that's why people that rip Mariota, he had a bad year, which he did, but he doesn't have the kind of targets that the Bucs have.
No, not even close.
Now, Tennessee's better than the Bucs in certain areas. Their two offensive tackles are outstanding.
Yeah.
They're elite. Bucs don't have
Taylor Lewan, yeah.
Bucs don't have and then Conklin. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really good. Jarrell Casey's a heck of a 3 technique.
Might not
be as good as a McCoy, but he's in the conversation.
Who runs the Titans?
I believe it's a guy named John Robinson who his mentor is? Jason Light. Mm-hmm. That's who his mentor is. I want to see the run game, Steve. I want to see a little bit more out of Vinnie Curry. I was watching him last week. I didn't see much out of Curry. That could be a case of a veteran, easing himself mm-hmm. into it, and I would understand that. And you know what I want to see? Quan Alexander takes some better angles, wrap up a little bit better.
He didn't look
I'm starting to wonder about Quan's technique, Steve. His energy is tremendous. His leadership is this, is that. But when all that's boiled down, you got to wrap up. You got to tackle.
Well, here's one for you. I don't know if we discussed this in the last podcast.
Duffner's got ways to go there with refining Alexander's technique.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about Alexander. But here's what I am worried about. And I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Speculating, I don't know. I'm just throwing out a rhetorical question here. Maybe you guys know the answer. Do you think this, and this guy was vocal about this when the new tackling rules were passed. Quan was very vocal on social media how this was disgusting. That's not the way he plays. Now he's he's smoothed his reaction quite a bit, because I wrote a story about that, and he's like, hey, you know, you just got to play. That's the rules, and you got to learn how to play with the new rules. Do you think it's in his head, the new tackling rules? He's scared to get flagged.
I think these tackling rules are going to be a big, big story in the first quarter of the season until players see how it's being called or not called, and they have to adjust to it. Steve, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, and a guy like Kwon Alexander, Steve, throughout his career, he's learned certain ways that you go about to put a guy on the ground, and if he's going to have to make that adjustment, it's not going to happen overnight, Steve.
No, it's a fair question by Lee, and I think the only answer I've got is too early to tell. We got to see how that progresses, and if he really is being timid, if it's in his head, we won't know it until we, you know, watch him play a
couple
of games.
One thing fans don't want to see, Steve, is a flag fest. They don't want to see a flag fest.
And that's a pet peeve of yours, but it's a well-placed pet peeve. It's an accurate pet peeve. You've more than once have stated that compared to 10, 15 years ago, it's a flag fest. And, you know, and you say this is why TV numbers slip. People don't want to see that.
And I'll give you my example, Steve. I know you want to get in there, but Steve, my best example with this, with the way this league is going, and I'll say it again. You know, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but that's fine. Every time, and I mean every time, you're watching a game, and there's a long pass, and it's being contested, and it falls incomplete, I'm looking for the flag.
I'm
looking for pass interference, and I don't think I'm alone in that, Steve.
No, you're not, Ira.
No, look, the players are as well. That's how the game has gone down. And I'll say this about Kwon, and it's just a reality of life. He was a fourth-round pick by NFL standards. He hasn't made a lot of money. He was suspended for 4 games. That cost him money, too. He's looking for a contract. Maybe he'll get an extension this summer like Levante David did after his 3rd year. But Kwon has to be smart and thinking, hey, if I look like a guy who's going to get flagged left and right, who's going to spend $10 million a year on me? And that could be a factor here. He may be being extra careful because it could affect his reputation as it relates to a new deal. All right, Ira, we're getting the official signal here at $1. They are booting us out. How do you want to end this podcast, Ira? What do you want to tell the good people of Tampa Bay and beyond?
I want to tell them that Saturday night's game would be perfect if the Bucks win. And one interception apiece, Mr. DeKemper, for Messrs. Stewart and Davis, and I'll tell you why. You know, you're not going to disagree with me here, because I'm trying to read these tea leaves. They're August tea leaves, and they're still a little soggy, but I'm trying to read them. I don't see Hargraves winning that outside job opposite Brent Grimes. I don't like his chances. They want to give him every chance, but ultimately, I don't like his chances, and I think it's going to be Davis or Stewart is going to win that job, and Hargraves might be lucky to hold on to that nickel job. How do you like that, DeKemper?